Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And starting on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal, the headline for the cover story, Surgery Wars. As the aging population in the Triangle creates a need for more surgeries, doctors and hospitals are fighting for market share and profits. And the actual article is inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, Changing Face of Surgeries. As outpatient surgeries skyrocket in the Triangle, hospitals, physician groups, insurers hit the drawing board to devise strategies to lure patients. And this article is written by Jason DeBrun. The baby boom generation is morphing into the OR, as in operating room, generation. Because the bulge of boomers are aging to senior status, Triangle ORs will be the site of more surgeries than ever in known history. In fact, the number of patients age 65 and above will increase at roughly double the rate of the rest of the population over the next decade, with an influx of retirees moving into the area contributing to the rise. But it's not just hospitals that will see more business. Surgeries increasingly will be performed in outpatient centers, which doctors say provide efficiency, better outcomes, and lower costs. Competition for the business of replacing fragile hips, repairing failing knees, and rebuilding rotator cuffs is mounting among local hospitals and outpatient centers. Given the profit margins for facilities that perform such procedures, it's easy to see why the battle lines are being drawn. Rex Healthcare, a subsidiary of UNC Healthcare, projects a 40% profit margin on a proposed surgery center in northern Wake County, an unheard-of margin in any industry except maybe technology. Similarly, Novant Health has projected a 26% profit margin for a surgery center just miles from Rex's proposed project, a lower margin, but still many multiples the single-digit margins for most hospital systems as a whole. Health systems argue they need some high-margin business to compensate for losses from Medicare, Medicaid, and uncompensated care. Indeed, the Triangle's seven largest hospitals advertised a combined community benefit of $862 million in 2013 alone, meaning they reported incurring that much in unreimbursed costs of care, according to data compiled by the North Carolina Hospital Association, a group that lobbies for North Carolina hospitals. In essence, the business of surgery is booming. The Triangle's 17 largest surgery centers saw a combined 172,886 patients from October 1, 2012 through September 30, 2013, the most recent time frame for which comprehensive data is available. As more people have surgeries, they are increasingly eschewing hospitals for ambulatory surgery centers, sometimes called same-day or outpatient surgery centers. Projections show that by the end of this decade, three out of every four surgeries will be performed in an outpatient setting, with the patient rarely needing to stay in the hospital overnight. As this paradigm shift occurs, insurers will closely monitor reimbursements to identify the best deals, and that means insurers may play a greater role in choosing where patients have surgery. These are interesting times, first and foremost. I think that's probably an understatement, says Carolyn Naup, Wake Med Health and Hospitals Senior Vice President of Ambulatory and Physician Operations. Operating rooms are a hot commodity, she says. Growing demand. Like anything, the move from hospitals to surgery centers is good when done reasonably, says Dr. George Edwards, a hand surgeon who practices at Capital City Surgery Center, which is affiliated with Wake Med. It's more efficient, the environment is more relaxing to the patient. Going to a full-service hospital evokes some trepidation in patients, but going to a surgery center somehow feels different. Edwards even compares them more to a hotel than a hospital. Because doctors run more routine surgeries in these centers, they, along with nurses and support staff, increase their efficiency. Turnover times are 10 to 20 minutes instead of 30 to 45 minutes, estimates Edwards. Surgery centers have a very focused approach, says Naup. You don't have the depth and breadth that you would see in a hospital. That means that the procedures done in these centers, hand, knee, or shoulder surgeries, are often done better. the ownership split. There's another value proposition as well, though one that surgeons might not readily cop to. In most outpatient surgery center cases, the ownership structure is one in which the hospital owns half and the surgeons collectively own half. At the Rex Surgery Center of Cary, for example, Rex controls a 55% ownership stake. At the Raleigh Orthopedic Center, the hospital controls a 51% stake. In the traditional hospital model, the health system simply contracts with surgeons to perform a surgery and covers all the overhead, including costs for supplies and implants. Often the costliest single item in a surgery and an area in healthcare where there is enormous cost variability, even among manufacturers of devices that are nearly identical. Surgeons would order their preferred devices or implants without much consideration or even awareness of cost, because the hospital would cover that portion of the costs, and the surgeons would simply get their portion in a check. It wasn't something they have historically given much thought. Now that they have ownership in the surgery centers, it becomes more clear and there are more direct financial incentives to choose one knee plant over another. Doctors say they would not sacrifice patient outcomes for costs, but in a world in which devices or implants are nearly identical but have large variations based on manufacturer, those cost factors become more a part of the decision process. Parec, a Raleigh-based company that contracts with hospitals to assist in medical supply purchasing, works right in this space. Mark Osborne, Aparec's vice president in charge of new product development, says he's seen an increased awareness of medical device costs in recent years, particularly for implants and orthopedic surgeries. What he calls high-dollar stuff is getting more attention. Osborne adds that surgeons and health systems are increasingly asking themselves, what does my choice about which implant I'm going to use cost me? He also points out that costs vary not only by brand, but also by which hospital does the buying. In the same way that hospitals negotiate with health insurers over reimbursement costs, they also negotiate with manufacturers over the price of implants. And there's also a related story along with the cover story. The headline on this one: North Carolina's regulatory process controls operating rooms. North Carolina is what is called a Certificate of Need state. This means that healthcare systems must apply for a Certificate of Need, or CON, with state regulators through the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services before making major healthcare investments like adding operating rooms. The reasoning behind the CON laws makes a certain sense. Having too many operating rooms in a given geographic area would leave health systems with inventory accruing overhead costs but no revenue. This could drive up overall healthcare costs as health systems try to make up for those costs by charging higher prices. Naturally, CON laws have critics as well. They say such laws artificially suppress competition and create an environment in which health systems vociferously fight each other for CON approval. A surgery center requires operating rooms. Because operating rooms require CON approval, these centers haven't popped up in the state as in some other states. North Carolina is really kind of behind the times when it comes to surgery centers, says WakeMed's Carolyn Naup. Look at Florida. There is a surgery center on nearly every corner. Because surgery centers provide such a value proposition to hospitals, they fight each other tooth and nail for CON approval to add operating rooms and want to deny rivals the chance to build their own and capture market share. Just look at Novant and Rex in Raleigh's northern suburbs. Each has filed a CON application to add an outpatient surgery center in that area, and each has filed objections to the other's request. Of course, Novant and Rex have a history of bad blood. They fought each other in a years-long CON battle to build a hospital in Holly Springs that Rex recently won. And now we turn to the column, Biz, A Quick Glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Rebecca Troyer. The first headline, Chef Scott Howell cooks up a new concept. Celebrated Durham chef Scott Howell, owner of Nana's, is expanding his roster of restaurants with plans to open a new Italian steakhouse at the American Tobacco campus in downtown Durham. Howell's new restaurant, Nana Steak, will anchor the 4,600-square-foot restaurant space in the new Aloft Durham Hotel that is expected to open in spring 2015 next to the Durham Performing Arts Center. Howell, a James Beard Foundation semifinalist, has been the owner and operator of Nana's on University Drive in Durham since it opened in 1992. He's also a partner in several other restaurant ventures like the Q Shack. Playing table tennis, Campbell style, Ann and John Campbell, founders of Campbell Alliance and investors in Waste Zero, decided to branch out and have opened the new Triangle Table Tennis Center in Morrisville. I was familiar with it because our middle son is a serious competitor in this sport, Ann Campbell says. As I was taking him around to different camps and tournaments, it was apparent that other cities of a similar size were able to support a dedicated table tennis center. The Campbells rent 30,000 square feet of space at 2900 Perimeter Park and set up 32 table tennis tables, though by reconfiguring the setup they could actually add more. Since opening on the last day in May, the center already sold 170 memberships and holds monthly tournaments with purses of no less than $3,000. Fort Worth City Manager back in town for special events. Looks like Wake County cannot get enough of its former manager, David Cook. Biz was told Cook will be involved in two separate events in the Triangle this month. The Garner Chamber of Commerce is hosting its annual Connect Conference on Economic Development on August 14, and event organizers say Cook, his predecessor, Richard Stevens, and the current manager, Jim Hartman, will talk about Wake County leadership, changes in the past, and the county's needs going forward. We can't wait to hear their perspectives, and of course we want to catch up with Cook. Not possible. I am supposed to participate remotely, says Cook. I need to make sure the technology works on both ends. Otherwise, Joe Durham, assistant county manager, is backup. But Cook will be here in town on August 27 to pick up hardware from the Greater Raleigh Conventions and Visitors Bureau. They're giving him the John Ross Leadership Award for his 13 years of service as a county manager. And in the They Said It section, a quote from Mark Brazil, tournament director for the Wyndham Championship, on Tiger Woods' back issues. Woods' early exit from the World Golf Championships Bridgestone Invitational in Akron, Ohio, is generating a new round of speculation about whether he'll be making the trip to North Carolina for the Wyndham to be held at Sedgefield Country Club in Greensboro. And his quote, I know how bad that can hurt. We're just taking a wait-and-see approach. And in a section called Social Madness, chatter around new brand for the area. On Twitter, we realize that our region is now a city-state and we need to brand our region. Gary Joyner, new chairman at Research Triangle Regional Partnership, says before the crowd at TBJ's Tomorrow's Real Estate event, we are looking into what do we want to call ourselves? Do we want to call ourselves Research Triangle? Raleigh-Durham? What do we call that? And also other tweets. I hear it called Raleigh-Durham mostly, followed by, is that close to Charlotte? At Justin Gern. Raleigh is Raleigh, Durham is Durham, Manhattan isn't Manhattan, Brooklyn. At The Real Cliffy B. Nothing hyphenated, not Raleigh-Durham, please. We are a region, not an airport. At Easy Tiger. The Triangle needs a new brand. It already has one. People outside of North Carolina just call it hashtag Raleigh. At Blake Collins. A city-state? Let's not get carried away. At F. Scott Moody. The Triangle does not need a brand. Every week a magazine names the region as the best place on earth to live, eat, learn. At D.U. Brawls. Then Facebook chimed in. Zach T. Medford. Since Raleigh is the best, let's just stick with that. Christina Serafino. I wouldn't be so against Raleigh-Durham, but we would have a nickname also. It's worked well for Minneapolis-St. Paul, a.k.a. the Twin Cities. Kevin Spurlock, working at the airport, I know that most people from out of town and the airlines call it Raleigh-Durham already. I got tired of correcting people about the proper name usage. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal. The first page is that of Amanda Hoyle, who covers commercial and residential real estate. The main headline, Cary's Alston Town Center back on track with new Whole Foods store. 400,000 square foot center offers ambitious plans. Upscale grocer Whole Foods Market has confirmed plans to open a new store location in West Cary that will also be the anchor tenant needed to kick off construction of the long-delayed Alston Town Center mixed-use development project. The new 40,000 square foot Whole Foods store will be the retail anchor for Alston Town Center, a 400,000 square foot commercial and residential development at the intersection of NC 540 Triangle Parkway and NC 55 in West Cary. Joe Dye, Executive Vice President of Brokerage and Development for Charlotte-based American Asset Corporation's Raleigh office, says his company has been working on the Whole Foods lease off and on since 2008 and on site development plans for Alston Town Center since 2004. It's been a long time coming, he says. The total 109-acre Alston Town Center site is slated to have at least another 100,000 square feet of commercial buildings and more than 100 residential units in a second phase of development, according to sketch plans filed with the Cary Planning Department. If site plan approvals remain on schedule, Dye says AAC should be breaking ground on the Whole Foods building in early 2015, with the store opening slated for 2016. The Whole Foods at Alston Town Center will be the grocer's second store in Cary and its sixth location in the Triangle. Is Triangle Town Center Mall primed for sale? The owner of Triangle Town Center Mall in North Raleigh is approaching a big deadline to pay off a $177 million debt loan on the property by the end of 2015. As a result, CBL & Associates Properties has reclassified the 1.3 million square foot Raleigh Mall as a non-core lender property within its portfolio, signaling that it is preparing to either sell, refinance, or otherwise restructure the mall's ownership. Triangle Town Center has been underperforming by CBL standards. The Raleigh Mall, anchored by Saks Fifth Avenue, Belk, Macy's, Dillard's, and Sears, was 92% leased at the end of 2013, according to CBL's annual report, and averaging retail sales of $308 per square foot. By comparison, CBL's properties company-wide were 95% leased. CBL is a 50% owner in the mall property, along with the mall's developer, the Richard E. Jacobs Group. But CBL handles almost all of the leasing and management duties for the property. Durham hasn't ruled out site options for new $60 million police headquarters. Durham is moving forward with plans to build a new $60 million police headquarters complex, even though city leaders haven't decided where it will be built. The city has issued two requests for qualifications to architectural design firms and to construction management firms that are interested in working on the city-owned building project. The deadline for applications was August 5, and contractors should be selected by the end of September. Three site options for the police headquarters are still under consideration, including the 4-acre existing police headquarters location at 505 West Chapel Hill Street, which would be torn down and rebuilt, the 4.5-acre former Carpenter Chevrolet site at 600 East Main Street, and the 19-acre former housing complex site at the intersection of Fayetteville and East Umstead Streets. And finally, under a section called Big Number, $7.8 million. The new asking price for the former Painter House at North Ridge Country Club in North Raleigh that had originally sold for $4.2 million in 2012 The website set up to market the 16,856 square foot estate home at 6510 New Market Way can also be translated into Russian and Arabic. And now we move on to the reporter page of Jason DeBrun, who covers healthcare and biopharmaceuticals. And his first article is headlined, Area to Face Small Shortage of Doctors. The Raleigh area is facing a larger shortage of preventative care doctors by 2020 than the Durham and Chapel Hill areas, though it is still projected to be in better balance than many other areas in the state, particularly Charlotte. These projections are according to data compiled by the Cecil G. Shepp Center for Health Services Research, part of UNC Chapel Hill, in what could be the most comprehensive physician shortage projections ever published. The data include projections for every state, as well as nearly 300 tertiary service areas. Projections run through 2030. Aaron Freyer, leader of the development team at the Shepp Center's Program on Health, Workforce, Research, and Policy, points out that many existing physician shortage projections simply combine all specialties. It's something she and many other health policy experts say not only leaves an incomplete picture, but could lead to bad policy. It's important to recognize that the national dialogue about physician supply has been narrowly focused until now, Freyer says. Using the number of physician specialists in a region as a sole indicator of how well patients' needs will be met in the future is neither accurate nor useful. Instead, we need to emphasize how alternative combinations of physicians can provide the needed services in a market area. Judge grants motion in Grifols plunder case. A quick look at the players' accusations and the court's order. Players, Grifols, manufacturer of blood plasma products with operations in Clayton. Three former executives, Kenneth McNish, Donald Sedlak, and Christopher Core. And Judge John Jolly Jr., Chief Special Superior Court Judge for Complex Business Cases. Accusation. Grifols accused the executives of conspiring a, quote, daring raid whereby they would lure key talent from Grifols, plunder its highly valuable trade secrets, and use them on behalf of a direct competitor, all in order to line their pockets and to knowingly harm Grifols' blood plasma products business, unquote. The order partially granted Grifols' motion for a preliminary injunction. As part of the judge's order, the executives are expressly restrained from soliciting or encouraging Grifols' employees to leave and restrained from reviewing, using, copying, or profiting from any confidential or proprietary information obtained from Grifols. The executives were also ordered to preserve Grifols' data, information, and property, and return account or contacts lists taken from Grifols to include a list of Grifols' customers with whom the executives might have done business. How the Ebola scare is pumping up a stock. As the new Ebola crisis hits Africa, investors saw a buying opportunity in Durham drug developer BioCryst Pharmaceuticals, a company developing a drug that could potentially be used to treat Ebola. In March, BioCryst announced results that showed the drug under development, simply called BCX4430, protected rodents against Ebola and the similar Marburg virus. The stock price, as of May 13th, $8.33, May 29, $10.22, June 6th, $10.92, and August 4th, $13.29. And now in a section called They Said It, the quote, overall, the NC track system was not certified by July 1, 2014, and the request for certification had not been made to CMS because of existing unresolved risks and not completing required certification tasks as planned. Until existing risks are resolved and key tasks are completed, earning federal certification is unlikely. That's from an audit on the new North Carolina program that reimburses doctors for Medicaid patients. The audit found that the system, called NCTRACS and run through the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, missed major milestones to earn federal certification, had unresolved risks that could further delay certification, had unresolved defects, and contained incorrect data. And another quote, although there may have been a delay in the state achieving reimbursement sooner due to the NCTRACS system not being certified by July 1, 2014, as planned by the department, a successful review will result in savings going forward and retroactively to as early as July 1, 2013. And that's from Aldana Woos, DHHS Secretary. And now we turn to the reporter page of Lauren Onisorge in the Triangle Business Journal. She covers technology and entrepreneurship. Her main article headline, Cashing In on College Football. Raleigh Entrepreneurs technology platform could spruce up demand for game films, team stats. Raleigh entrepreneur Sebastian Bunster is betting his savings that ACC fans want their own version of NFL Game Rewind. Bunster, founder of Review Game Film, never hit the turf personally. I've always been into the analysis, he says, adding that the TV-level analysis isn't enough to quench his interest. The team and the players, they see a different part of the game. That's where the fun is in terms of seeing plays develop. Specifically, he's talking about coach footage, a raw video tool the playmakers review after each game. Up until recently, the film hasn't been commercialized at all, Bunster says. What we're trying to do is give college fans access to it. But it's not just a video bank. Review Game Film would be a social media platform to interact with other fans and a place to brag with your own analysis. What we're trying to build is a platform where, as a college football fan, you can go in and see highlights from the coach's angle and participate in discussions on strategy and ask questions, get feedback from other fans. He says, adding that he expects a fantasy component as well. After you watch the film, you can make matchup selections. With the rise of TV coverage, the footage is no longer proprietary, Bunster says. I'd say a generation ago, game film was this really well-kept secret, he says. Coaches didn't want to share it, but now the way it works is there are no secrets in college football. Bunster is working with a couple of teams from the ACC, and it's moving slowly as Raycom Sports owns the rights to the film. Bunster and his founding team have put in $20,000, but they'll need a lot more, anywhere from $75,000 to $100,000, to ink the licensing deals. He plans to actively solicit VC angels after the demo is up and running. IEM supports families affected by Hurricane Sandy, thanks to contract. Madhu Barawal, CEO of Morrisville-based emergency management contractor IEM, has had a busy year, and a lot of recent business has been fueled by the infamous Hurricane Sandy. Approximately 150 IEM employees are working with homeowners impacted by the hurricane in New York. Jobs, too, have been created from the contract, though most of those positions are in New York. We're about 6 months into it, Barawal says. IEM is assisting the state of New York in deploying two streams of funds from FEMA and the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. For the FEMA funds, it's really looking at large infrastructure projects, she says, pointing to everything from generators for evacuation routes and gas stations and analyzing public works plants. On the HUD side, it's working with homeowners deploying funds to repair the 20,000 properties damaged. We are very happy to be providing that support, she adds. Kerry loses headquarters as SideQuest opts for Morrisville to expand operations. As SideQuest moves from Weston Parkway to its new role as anchor in Perimeter Park 2 in Morrisville, Trial Card is moving in. The Kerry-based marketing analytics firm is expanding into an additional 60,000 square feet previously occupied by SideQuest. That brings the total to 150,000 square feet of space in the triangle. Trial Card is expanding its 325 employee roster. New positions are in sales, IT, customer experience management, and project management. And now we turn to the reporter page for Dawn Curry, who covers small business, personalities, and triangle trends. The main headline, Trey Bella Florist expands bridal boutique in Durham. Sisters hope for brisk sales boost. After 9 years of operating a florist boutique and gift shop in Durham, two sisters have purchased a building to expand as a one-stop bridal shop. Trey Bella Bridal, a store Southern Bride and Groom magazine co-publisher Jenna Olander says has put Durham on the bridal map, is establishing the new two-story shop at 124 East Main Street in Durham. The street-level shop space is currently being renovated, the second floor has become the bridal shop, and the florist portion of the business is being run out of a historic house on Broad Street that will eventually be a design studio. Two sisters, Rachel Price and Becky Simmons, started the company as florists with their younger sister, Kate Center. After outgrowing several smaller locations, their last store was 1,300 square feet, they decided to purchase a building in downtown Durham with 3,600 square feet spread out over two floors for $550,000. The basement is being built out for office space rental. At our store, we could only have one appointment at a time, Price says. We couldn't accommodate more traffic and literally had to turn business away. And with the number of dresses we had, we physically didn't have the space to display them. Once the renovation is complete, the upscale bridal shop will feature gifts and home decor, bridesmaid and mother of the bride dresses, and the florist shop with space for hands-on classes. The bridal shop will feature wedding gowns from upscale designers such as Jenny Packham, Blue Willow, San Patrick, and Modern Trousseau, to name a few, ranging in price from $1,800 to $7,000. The store currently has two full-time employees in addition to Price and Simmons, and plans to hire more when the expansion is complete in the fall. TSA pre-checks now taking applications for RDU. A new Transportation Security Administration pre-check service being offered at Raleigh-Durham International Airport will let some travelers keep their belts on. The pre-check program allows low-risk travelers to expedite their check-in process when traveling through an airport. Applications will be accepted for anyone trying to enroll in the TSA pre-check at a new application center located at 10911 Raven Ridge Road, Suite 103 in Raleigh. Documentation and an $85 fee will be required, as well as fingerprints. Approved travelers will be processed through TSA checkpoints faster at 118 participating airports and on airlines including Air Canada, Alaska Airlines, American Airlines, Delta Airlines, Hawaiian Airlines, JetBlue Airways, Southwest Airlines, Sun Country Airlines, United Airlines, U.S. Airways, and Virgin America. Once travelers receive a known traveler number from TSA, they will have the privilege of wearing their shoes, belts, and light outerwear in some screening lanes. Approved passengers can keep their laptop in its case and may keep their liquids and gels in carry-on bags. Hillsboro's Mystery Brewing to unveil canned beer. Hillsboro's Mystery Brewing Company says it plans to distribute beer in cans by the end of the year. Cans are what's hot right now, says brewery founder and president of the North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild, Eric Lars Myers. There's an immediacy when you have cans. You don't let it age. That's what people want to take to the beach. The two-year-old seasonal-only brewery is joining several other craft breweries that have made a similar move in the past few weeks, including Lone Rider Brewing Company of Raleigh and Wake Forest White Street Brewing Company. Adding cans to his statewide distribution won't replace bottles, he says, unlike Lone Rider. It does mean doubling production from last year's 850 barrels. By the time the expansion is complete, Myers hopes to roll out his latest product, a wine barrel-aged Brett beer using yeast, a special yeast, and 350 pounds of locally sourced peaches. And in the They Said It section, the Research Triangle Clean Tech Cluster has launched a 2-year strategic plan that includes examining how local companies recruit talent. Local companies that are Clean Tech Cluster members will be interviewed over the course of several weeks, and the results will be analyzed by the cluster for local hiring trends and industry insight. The quote, "We are interested in millennials, but want to know the company's own observations. We intend to make a digest of the information we are hearing and what the trends are. It's still early in the conversation, but we are learning things we didn't expect." And that's Krista Wagner Vinson, RTCC Program Director. And in the By the Numbers section, businesses are leasing more cars compared to 2010. 58.6%, the percentage of Triangle businesses that leased cars. In 2010, it was 49.4%. 25%, number that seek hybrids or electric vehicles compared to 16% in 2010. 37.9% are considered entrepreneurs of family businesses, up from 30% in 2010. 19 months, average length of lease, down from 25 months in 2010. And now we turn to the Executive Voice question and answer column in the Triangle Business Journal. And in this edition, it features Brad Wilson. And the headline, "Leading Through Meteoric Change, Blue Cross CEO on Challenges, Opportunities." And this article is written by Jason DeBrun. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina is going through an organizational restructure, consolidating various parts of its business under more defined groupings. The move comes as the state's largest insurer, with $5.5 billion in revenue, has expanded partnerships outside its core business of providing health insurance. As with many companies connected to healthcare, BCBSNC has looked to find business in new areas, like partnerships with FastMed Urgent Care, Key Physicians, or Carolina Advanced Health. As these new partnerships formed, they sprung out of disparate parts of Blue Cross, which now employs a total of 4,500 workers. CEO Brad Wilson took some time to discuss healthcare and a little bit more about him. "Tell us a little about this strategy shift. Blue Cross is executing a strategy stemming partly from the Affordable Care Act, and what you have seen is a result of that process. There are many of the same players, except Dr. Don Bradley, who retired, but a lot of different responsibilities. How does this affect employers? Yes, there will be change, but there is going to be a lot of steady state. We believe this positions us to bring the creative and innovative product designs to employers. It's all about that higher quality at lower cost, a phrase I'm going to wear out. Employers want to know how to best utilize the plan offerings they have, both in sickness and in preventative health." Do you think employers are looking to engage more in the health of their employees? Absolutely. It is definitely a change since my first year, and definitely a change even in the past 7 or 8 years, particularly as healthcare has stayed on the front page and as the conversation continues about cost and quality. Employers and individuals are thinking more than ever before about how to maintain and improve their health. I hear you are an avid reader. I read a lot of stuff, probably a couple of books a month, supplemented by a lot of periodicals. Right now I'm reading the Lyndon Johnson series, The Years of Lyndon Johnson by Robert Caro. It's absolutely fascinating, but it's the kind of book, because it's so thick, I need to have another one going, so I'm also reading The Sleepwalkers by Christopher Clark, which is about World War I. What's your favorite phone app? Skyview. It's the one where you see the constellations. Where was that when I was taking astronomy? Also, I like the Watch ESPN app. I take it you like sports. I do. College football is my favorite. I played football in high school, but there are very few sports that I won't watch. College basketball is number 2. What was your first job? I delivered newspapers, the Lexington Dispatch, on a bicycle. It was an afternoon edition, and you would pick the papers up at a little country store and wrap them, and on Fridays you would ring the doorbell with your collection book. I think it was 25 cents a week or some ridiculous price like that. What did you want to be when you grew up? A lawyer, from the time I was in third grade. It goes back to reading biographies. It seemed to me that many people who did important things were lawyers. Not all, but many. If there were a movie about your life, who would you want to play you? Tom Hanks. He's a history guy. What's in your fridge? Orange juice, low-cal skim milk, light Cool Whip. Notice a trend? A lot of cheese. I love cheese. Apples, lettuce, unsweetened iced tea, and Diet Pepsi. And Diet Coke, because my wife likes Diet Coke. Uh-oh, Coke and Pepsi, does that become a problem? No, because I'm more agnostic than she is. Whatever is cold, that's fine. And of course, I have a door full of Mount Olive pickles, by the way. Mount Olive Pickle Company President William Bryan is a BCBSNC board member. Bill is always very generous with his product. Where do you buy your suits? No particular place. Cannons in Cameron Village, Tom James. There's a men's shop in Blowing Rock that I like. I'm not a big clothes person. My favorite attire is a pair of shorts and a t-shirt and tennis shoes. What are you afraid of? Failure. Disappointing people who depend on me, which I guess is tied to failure. The fear that you make the wrong decision, but with all good intention and with the best possible information, but you make a mistake. Or you make the wrong decision and it has dramatic consequences on a lot of people that you can't necessarily go and clean up or remediate. However, you can't let the sensitivity to that paralyze you or keep you from making timely, informed, clear, and a bit redundant here, but decisive decisions. And now we turn to the small business section for the legal focus column in the Triangle Business Journal. And this is written by Jim Verdonik, who is an attorney with Ward & Smith PA in Raleigh. The headline, Can One Question Change Your Life? How do you know? What would you do if I told you one simple question could change your life and your business? The question is, how do you know that you know what you think you know? Most people think their business is based on reality, but is that true? Are all your meetings, telephone calls, emails, and reports based on reality or on pretense? Does your team question reality in meetings, or do they just nod their heads yes to achieve the expected consensus? And tell their spouses over dinner what a big mistake their boss is making? The search for reality begins by understanding that most people really know less than they think they know. Many people can explain and convince others that they understand reality. If you can't convince others something is true, you won't achieve your goals even if it is true. We often compound problems and lose opportunities because we don't probe whether we really know what we think we know. Of course, you want your business to be reality-based. So how do you make reality-based decisions when people ask you to spend time or money, change your plans, or make important commitments? It's more difficult than most people think. If it were easy to be a reality-based business, everyone would do it. There's a great example of why it's difficult in the Tom Hanks movie Big. When Hanks asks someone who is pitching a product idea a question that calls into question the presenter's version of reality, like the character Hanks questioned, many people react by being offended, embarrassed, or frustrated, or they become confused and start talking in circles. This happens because when you question whether people really know what they think they know, you shake belief systems they created to make themselves feel safe. You cause people to question what other things they misunderstand. Sometimes this starts chain reaction anxiety. So we often avoid asking tough questions to get along with others. Lawyers are different. That's why lawyers and dentists are equally popular. Obviously, people hire lawyers to probe the other side in litigation or when we negotiate. It's what lawyers are known for. People often ask, Why are you cross-examining me whenever anyone causes them anxiety with questions? But we lawyers also probe our clients because our job is to help clients make reality-based decisions. One difference between good lawyers and great lawyers is that great lawyers help clients understand that their true safety is based in reality and not on stories that fall apart under questioning. Business is the same. Good managers make reality-based decisions even though it creates team anxiety. Great business leaders master the art of creating teams that crave reality because reality is the mother of success. Are you up to the challenge of asking our simple question without tearing your team apart? Let's start by understanding a few simple principles. Humility is important. Practice on yourself before you start asking others. You might be surprised that you don't know what you think you know. No one has a lock on reality. The search for reality is a team sport. Change your question to, how do we know that we know what we think we know? Then, instead of being the boss whose reality quest causes anxiety attacks, your team will lead you to reality. And now we turn to the viewpoint page in the Triangle Business Journal. And the guest column is written by Christopher Smith, who is a partner at Smith Anderson, where he leads the business litigation team. He also is a member of the board of directors of the North Carolina Chamber. And the headline on the viewpoint column, his opinion, firms should hail changes in patent case venue laws. Beyond the front page state budget debates about issues like teacher pay and Medicaid funds are two less noticed pieces of legislation that were pushed by the North Carolina Chamber and tenaciously pursued by diligent legislators, which should have significant positive long-term impact on our business climate. Both bills passed both chambers with powerful bipartisan majorities and the support of the business community. Former presidents Reagan and Clinton both said that the best social program is a good job. If you agree, then you will be pleased to learn of these developments. They make North Carolina a still more attractive place for the best companies with the best jobs and the best ideas that will build our state's future. What happened? Senate bills 648 and 853 passed and became law on August 7. The bills contain anti-patent troll legislation, changes to the North Carolina Holding Company statute, greatly increasing structural and financing options for our state's corporations, a lawsuit venue provision allowing our companies to efficiently manage their litigation, and updates to the North Carolina Business Court, which, if built upon, could put that court on a path to exceed the distinction of the Delaware Chancery Court. 1. Anti-patent troll legislation. North Carolina is home to brilliant inventors developing ideas that create jobs and opportunity. But for many years, the inventive community nationwide has been harassed by patent trolls, companies that exist solely to use the economic leverage of the threat of expensive intellectual property litigation to shake down inventors who have better things to do than fight lawsuits. This legislation empowers a North Carolina company to sue a troll in North Carolina if the troll makes an unfair patent demand or files an unfair lawsuit anywhere against the North Carolina company. More importantly, it puts the individuals who control or direct the troll on the hook for their misconduct. This legislation was advocated for by a consortium of business interests, including the North Carolina Technology Association, and headed by SAS and its general counsel, John Boswell. SAS had been targeted by a troll, but did not blink. The company stood its ground and spent $8 million fighting the extortion, winning at every turn, including an award of fees, which it could not collect from the undercapitalized troll. Once this new legislation sets in, SAS and other North Carolina companies can look forward to spending their money on something productive rather than litigating frivolous lawsuits. This law is unique to North Carolina. It is fair to say that we are leading the country in protecting the inventive community. 2. Holding company simplification. Previously, if a North Carolina public company wanted to reorganize to use a holding company structure, a shareholder vote was required. And for a private company, shareholder appraisal rights were triggered. These corporate structural innovations are important because they permit new financing, disposition, and leverage options for companies, but the process as it existed was expensive and complex. Several states, including Delaware, have laws enabling these reorganizations without requiring a shareholder vote or triggering appraisal rights. The legislature on the governor's desk simplifies the process for North Carolina companies, reducing the costs of restructuring while fully protecting shareholder ownership and rights. This makes us a still better location for incorporation and eliminates the incentive for North Carolina companies to go elsewhere, such as Delaware. 3. Venue selection. Most case law acknowledges a company's ability to designate the forum for disputes regarding the internal affairs of the company, such as shareholder lawsuits and the like. But there is some contrary trial court authority, and no North Carolina court has ruled on the matter. This legislation makes it clear that North Carolina companies can specify that such disputes be filed in our state. This keeps companies from having to battle disputes far afield, like the anti-patent troll legislation. North Carolina is leading the country with this new law. 4. Business Court Update. Started in 1996, our business court has national recognition. The legislation addressing its workload had not been updated in many years. The new bill does that and, among other things, directs that appeals of significant business court decisions go directly to the Supreme Court. The policy behind these changes is to put our court on a path to outshine the Delaware Chancery Court and all the benefits that would bring to the state. In separate action, the recently passed state budget provides for 2 more business court judges in 2015, which of course will require high-quality appointments to achieve the desired objective. I had some view of these developments and admired the efforts of my colleague, former State Senator Richard Stevens, as he worked closely with Triangle legislators, Representative Tom Murray and Senator Tamara Barringer, who were instrumental and dogged in their efforts to help enact these bipartisan provisions, which are excellent policy. The Chamber's North Carolina Vision 2030 has as one of its 4 pillars to maintain and advance a competitive business climate, the foundation for job creation, our best social program. The General Assembly's hard work on these 2 bills is a significant step in the right direction. And with all of these viewpoint columns, there is a What Do You Think box. We want to hear your opinion on the issues you read about in Triangle Business Journal. Submit letters to the editor to triangle@bizbizjournals.com. A few guidelines. Keep it brief and civil, and remember to mention which news story you're writing about. No anonymous letters will be printed. All submissions become the property of Triangle Business Journal and will not be returned. Submissions may be edited and may be published or otherwise used in any medium. And with our remaining minutes, we'll go to the People on the Move section of the Triangle Business Journal and read the Spotlight column, which is on Larry Blue, Chief Operating Officer at Bell and Howell. Ask Larry Blue what his responsibilities are as the new Chief Operating Officer at Bell and Howell, and he offers a very practical answer. "I walk around, talk to people, and worry a lot," he says. In addition to that, Blue is charged with overseeing the day-to-day operations of the Durham-based Mail Technology Company. Bell and Howell currently employs a total of 1,033 people, 251 of whom are located in the Triangle. The company is currently helmed by CEO Ramesh Ratan. What's one thing you wish people knew about your job? The high quality of the team here. What a great group of people that care tremendously about the success of Bell and Howell. What are some of your major goals in this position? To become the leader in technology solutions for customer communications and commerce in print, parcels, and digital. To drive improvements in product management across the product line. To have increased emphasis on advanced software solutions. To focus on gains in our inserting business. Biggest pet peeve? Dishonesty, lack of integrity. Too many instances of people in business today believing they get ahead through dishonesty. It isn't always a zero-sum game. Biggest worry? Growing the business fast enough to capture the opportunities out there. Bell and Howell has a great future, thanks to the advances made in the past year. We have a lot to do to capitalize on those gains. Triangle business person you most admire. Jim Goodnight, impressed with what he's done in giving back to the area. Personal. My wife Lisa and I have three children, Anna, Andy, and Allie. Last book read, Think Like a Freak by Stephen Levitt and Stephen Dubner. And quickly we'll read a couple of items in the calendar section. The Triangle is about to get some high-profile visitors. Ford Motor Company CEO Alan Mulally will be in town, along with Chris Weibacher, CEO of Sanofi, to keynote the 2014 CEO Forum at Raleigh's Northridge Country Club. On October 30th and on November 11th, Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak will be in Raleigh for the Internet Summit at the Raleigh Convention Center. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can reach us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.